Good morning. It's Monday, November 4th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, how this became the most expensive election in U.S. history, why local officials are readying drones and panic buttons for Election Day, plus tips to lower your anxiety. But first, we are on the eve of Election Day. Already, more than 70 million people have cast their ballots. Over the weekend, the last push for the campaigns, Vice President Kamala Harris visited Georgia, North Carolina, and spoke at a church in Detroit, Michigan. She also made a surprise appearance on Saturday Night Live, alongside Maya Rudolph, who plays Harris on the show.
I gotta tell myself something over here. Come here. I'm gonna vote for us. Great. Any chance you are registered in Pennsylvania? Nope, I am not. Well, it was worth a shot.
Tonight, Harris is scheduled to be campaigning in Pennsylvania, where she'll be joined by a long list of celebrities, including Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, Ricky Martin, and Oprah Winfrey. Former President Donald Trump, meanwhile, made stops in North Carolina, Virginia, and Pennsylvania, where he repeated his false claims that the 2020 election was stolen and told a crowd of supporters that he should have never left the White House. He also joked about reporters being shot when referring to the bulletproof glass around him.
And to get me, somebody would have to shoot through the fake news. And I don't mind that so much, because I don't mind that.
Trump's campaign later tried to clarify, saying those remarks, quote, had nothing to do with journalists being hurt. With just hours to go in the race, I wanted to check in one last time with my colleague, Gideon Resnick. Hey, Gideon.
Hey, Shamita.
Okay, we are in the final 2 days here. How are the two campaigns feeling about their chances?
For the entire course of this campaign, you've often heard Vice President Kamala Harris say that she is the underdog in this race. Mm-hmm. They sometimes still say that, but now they're inching a little bit more towards saying that she will win it, albeit by razor-thin margins. A recent New York Magazine piece that talked to officials in and outside the campaign used this, quote, nauseously optimistic to define the sentiment there. They have had more money than the Trump campaign, more organizational resources, more staff this whole time, really. But the thing that's changed in recent days is that the Harris campaign says they see late deciding voters moving to her column. And they point to early voting statistics, particularly among women voters, as signs that they are on track for a victory. And there's some outside polling evidence that late deciding voters are breaking Harris's way. The most recent set of New York Times Siena College polls of the swing states showed Harris with a double-digit lead among people who have only recently made up their minds about who to support. In this poll, Harris wins that group 55% to Trump's 44%.
Yeah, and there has been lots to consider for late deciding voters in these past 2 weeks, between some of Trump's former advisors saying that he would run the country as a fascist, the comments made by one of Trump's speakers at the Madison Square Garden rally, calling Puerto Rico an island of garbage. We're also seeing on TikTok, the youngest generation of voters is discovering for the first time Donald Trump's infamous Access Hollywood tape that first circulated just before Election Day in 2016, which has now been viewed on TikTok millions of times. Given all of this, how is the Trump campaign feeling?
They still project confidence. They sometimes talk about those polls that we just referenced as not being what they are seeing. They point to early voting numbers among Republicans as good evidence for their success in this election. Trump also has been traveling to a number of states like Virginia and New Mexico, where he's not actually known to be competitive, which some say could be a sign the campaign believes that those states are more in play than polls show. The other theory that often gets presented by reporters is that he's just trying to get some big crowds in these states. Perhaps if he were to lose, Trump could turn around and point to those crowds as evidence that there must be fraud at play in the election. And then separately, his allies have also pointed to various partisan polls, even betting markets in some cases, showing Trump ahead. Again, the idea here being that if he were to lose, that it could only be because of some sort of election malfeasance. So a note of caution there, as you might be hearing that message that Trump is, you know, way, way ahead. It's not true, at least not according to the most respected nonpartisan polls that are out there at the moment.
Okay, so speaking of the polls, we know that they have been neck and neck for a while now. Any last-minute polling surprises we should be aware of?
There was one from this weekend. The latest poll from the Des Moines Register shows Vice President Kamala Harris leading in Iowa 47% to 44% among likely voters. Now, Shamita, you might be asking, Iowa, why are we talking about Iowa? Well, there are two good reasons here. The first is this poll is done by one of the most respected and reputable pollsters out there, Ann Seltzer. I don't generally think that people should, you know, look at one poll result and talk about it in this way, but if there ever was going to be one that people do that for, it's going to be Seltzer's poll. She has a reputation for putting out these quite accurate last-minute polls, like when she previously captured momentum for Obama in the state in 2008, for Trump in 2016, that other pollsters have not caught. So she has a track record of being pretty spot on in her state. And the second reason here is it's not just about Iowa, right? These numbers and Iowa itself could be a bellwether for other states in the region. It's typically to the right of Midwestern blue wall states. And Iowa is a place that Trump carried twice. Back in June, he was up by 18 points against then nominee President Joe Biden. And something specific has also happened in Iowa that is worth mentioning. There has been a strict 6-week abortion ban that went into effect over the summer. Mm-hmm. And this poll found that women and older and politically independent women were driving a shift towards Harris. So if women in other states are feeling similarly to what this sentiment showed in Iowa, that could be an indicator of something that other polls have not quite caught yet. So to be honest, this did feel a little bit like a earthquake for political observers this weekend. But again, I would urge caution on just looking at a singular poll and trying to divine an outcome. It is an outlier. We just don't know if it's capturing something that other people haven't seen just yet.
Okay, so that's the presidential race. Really quick, where do things stand with the Senate and the House races?
Yeah, in the Senate, Democrats currently have a slim majority. There are 34 Senate seats that are up for grabs. It's likely to come down to just about 9 competitive races. To name a few that people are paying attention to, there are Democrats in difficult red states like incumbent John Tester in Montana. There are Republicans that look at that as a prime pickup opportunity. And then there's Republican Senator Ted Cruz in a tight race in Texas. Also, an interesting one going on in Nebraska, where an independent named Dan Osborne appears to be doing quite well against a Republican incumbent there, Deb Fischer. If we move over to the House, that's seen as more of a toss-up. Mm-hmm. Republicans control that chamber today. There are about 43 competitive races there. And a lot of the places that people are looking at are these districts that President Biden won in states like New York and California in 2020 that went for Republicans in their congressional districts in 2022. In fact, in these blue states that Republicans are making some meaningful gains. So some election observers are saying that we could see a scenario where one party might win the Senate, another party might win the House. And if that were to be the case, that would mean that whoever wins the presidency would be governing with a divided Congress.
All right. Lots to watch there, too. Gideon, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And just a reminder, as you prepare for Election Day, make sure to check out our state-by-state guide on how to vote in partnership with NBC News. That's in the Apple News app. This is shaping up to be the most expensive U.S. election we have ever had. According to Open Secrets, an organization that tracks this, spending hit nearly $16 billion between the campaigns and thousands of political groups. $1 billion was spent in Pennsylvania alone. And if you have dared to turn on a TV, you'll know how nonstop the political ads have been. $10 billion were spent on those, the most ever spent. Fundraising broke records, too. Vice President Harris's campaign raised over $1 billion in roughly 100 days, the most money ever raised in a single quarter. By comparison, it took President Biden's 2020 campaign pretty much the whole year to hit that same amount. Former President Trump in this election has relied heavily on large contributions to super PACs to fuel his campaign. NBC points out this is the first election we've seen campaigns outsource so much of their get-out-the-vote efforts and ground operations to super PACs. Daniel Wiener, the director of elections and government at the Brennan Center for Justice, told CBS how this system allows election spending to balloon.
A PAC that is separate from candidates and parties can raise unlimited amounts of money. So both Kamala Harris and Donald Trump have affiliated PACs. They're supposed to be independent, but in fact, they can work pretty closely with the campaign. Those are the entities that are actually taking the million or even $5 million checks.
Both candidates had billionaires pouring money into their campaigns through PACs. Media mogul Michael Bloomberg gave $50 million to a PAC that supports Harris. The largest individual donation went to support Trump and came from a member of the Mellon family, $150 million. And tech CEO Elon Musk has been very vocal and very spendy in support of the Trump campaign. Musk donated close to $119 million to a pro-Trump PAC he created that's been responsible for most of the former president's door-knocking and canvassing efforts in battleground states.
I do think that is one of the things that's on the line in this election is the idea of whether it's possible to win against a campaign that is backed by a few juggernaut billionaire funders. That's one of the things people will be deciding when they vote.
That's Evan Osnos, staff writer for The New Yorker, who warns against all this money in our politics.
I don't think that anybody would argue that as money has continued to climb in our politics, that our democracy has in any way become more trustworthy or robust. I think if anything, you see that the more money that's piled in, the less confidence people have in these institutions to represent the interests of individuals.
Congress has considered whether campaign finance reform can address this. In recent years, Democrats have supported a federal bill called the Freedom to Vote Act that would tighten the rules for PACs to make sure they're truly independent of candidates and parties and require PACs to provide more transparency around large donations. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says if Democrats maintain control of the Senate and the White House, he hopes to pass it in the next term. Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. The Washington Post reports that there are unprecedented security plans in place for Election Day, including panic buttons for election workers and surveillance drones. At least two states, Nevada and Washington, have activated the National Guard to be on standby just in case. In other areas, there are extra law enforcement on the street. The Post spoke with democracy experts who say voters should feel confident casting their ballots with these additional security measures. At the same time, though, they lament that our political discourse has gone so off the rails that we have to take these steps in the first place. In what has now become a tradition, voters are leaving their I voted stickers on the tombstone of Susan B. Anthony, the defender of women's voting rights. Anthony famously broke the law by casting an illegal ballot in 1872. She didn't live to see women's suffrage become a reality. And this year, for the first time, her home in Rochester, New York, which is now a museum, is an early voting site. The Washington Post talked to the president of the museum, who said Saturday was an overwhelming day with massive crowds of voters flocking to the house to cast their ballots early and to remember the suffragist. And finally, if you are filled with anxiety in these final days, there are lots of good tips being shared by professionals and mental health experts. Things like fill a bag with ice and hold it to your face for 30 seconds to slow down a racing heart. Or find a healthy distraction for your mind. Well, here's one of my favorite distraction tips that I've come across. The Times of San Diego says the San Diego Zoo is teaming up with a meditation app tomorrow to bring anxious Americans a live stream of adorable zoo animals. Research suggests that watching cute animals can reduce your stress up to 50%. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next from The Atavist magazine. It tells the story of an effort by folks in Maine to rid their community of a neo-Nazi. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.